Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from potent poison to prideful princess, and today we're talking about purple worms.
Hey, Brian, how you doing today?
Good, man. Good.
So today we're going to talk about one of, I think personally that this is one of D&D's most iconic monsters. When I think of like D&D specific monsters, I usually think of the Beholder, the dragon, obviously like the specific D&D style dragon.
Storm Giant, basically Demogorgon. Yeah. Shout out to Demogorgon.
Yeah,
I did
sure,
it to myself.
Yeah.
Everything that's on the cover of a book, like that's what I think
and
of.
And the Purple Worm to me is one of those monsters.
Right on.
What do you know about the Purple Worm?
It's a big guy.
It is a big guy.
You're the big guy. Yeah. It's a big purple guy.
It's true.
He's purple. No, Adventure Zone.
I forgot about Adventure Zone.
Season 2 Crit Roll, which I live vicariously through Jacob. I watch my Crit Roll through your special guest, Jake. He's like, well, can I just like talk to you about it anyway?
Yeah, why not?
I was like, this D&D campaign did this, is the story I hear all the time.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, in Crit Roll, they did this and this. Yeah. And Season 1 Crit Roll, I guess, uses some purple worms for...
I think they go to the Underdark in that one.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know if this is like worthy of even tagging as a spoiler, but here's something that's going to happen in Critical Role that involves purple worms is like they're going to walk through the tunnels of purple worms.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that today.
I won't even talk about anything else.
That's an actual lore thing. So let's get into it.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
So purple worms are one of the biggest and baddest beasts from the Monster Manual. These massive burrowing monsters terrorize the creatures of the Underdark as they chew through solid stone in pursuit of prey. A dim-witted, ravenous force of nature, these creatures regard anything they encounter as food. Purple worms are feared for their potential for catastrophic carnage and their ability to swallow even a giant whole.
This is like a cosmic event.
This is a big deal.
For like a Kuatoa.
Yeah,
like,
seriously. Yeah. Holy crap.
Just Kuatoa fall. Like a purple worm accidentally digs too deep, falls out of the ceiling, and just lands on the Kuatoa civilization. Could happen.
It could happen. Though incredibly violent and destructive, purple worms are not evil inherently. They're considered to be neutral or unaligned and much more akin to a force of nature than anything else.
Okay.
Though the purple worm is not necessarily a campaign ender due to its lack of like nuance as a big bad evil guy.
Sure.
It is definitely a high level boss type encounter.
Okay, yeah.
Like, real powerful.
Like this is at the top end of the random encounter table or whatever. Like if you're going to have like a standard unaligned monster to just like meet in the wild, you know.
And you're talking they gotta be like level 12. They gotta be at least level 12.
Or they gonna die.
Or they're gonna die.
They could probably be level 10.
Maybe level 10.
Yeah. Level 10's really good.
Yeah. It is. It's quite
I actually don't know anything about the stat block, but I would just imagine I feel like we're pretty...
Four level 10s could probably take on a purple worm.
Okay, cool. Because I feel like we're pretty careful DMs when it comes to combat planning. We're like always
erring on the side of caution. And you know what? You're right. Because players can be very powerful. I would say maybe to be real about the minimum, four level 9s would be...
It really is based off your play. Are your characters going to optimize combat? Is that in their role play?
Yeah, that's the thing. Not all players are created equal. Really, some people are really suboptimal, and some people are so optimal it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
so.
Some people just like some characters want to hide during combat.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. All right, let's go back to purple worms.
Yeah.
So as its name implies, the purple worm
is
indeed deep purple in color with a pale yellow underbelly.
Oh, what?
A little nuance there.
It's all the scrapings.
I guess all the scrapings. Separating its yellow underbelly from its purple overshell is a line of hard horn crest going down its sides.
Oh, neat. Okay, so there's some texture to this creature. It's not like a smooth, like, tubular.
No, it's not.
It's pretty tubular, though.
Yeah, it is pretty tubular. Its body is well-armored by a thick carapace, and it is segmented. One end of the purple worm terminates in a monstrously large mouth lined with dozens of hundreds of enormous teeth.
Yeah.
Dozens, like, two hundreds.
Like rows teeth. Of them, right? Like
yeah,
sharp
like
teeth,
row
kind
after
of.
Row. Yeah,
but just like all
teeth.
The way around.
Yeah, all the
doesn't
way
like end
yeah.
in a, like the hinge of the jaw. It doesn't have that part of its mouth.
You know what? I'm going to be honest. It really depends. Like, I was looking at all the different art of Purple Worms Crest Edition, and it's drastically different, like, interpretations all over the place.
Like a slight proboscis? Like it
shifts
its teeth a little bit?
Been like that. There's been a straight proboscises, if you will.
And is it a proboscis? It's the thing that Great White Shark does with its jaw, too. Like, just like when it goes to bite, its jaw like lunges forward. Like,
oh,
like
for
a
sure.
good amount.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
know
it like wow, it yeah. like basically fucking ejects yeah. from
well,
its face.
So, okay, so like the earlier depictions of purple worms had like a straight like lamprey, kind of just circular.
Mm-hmm. Like teethy, a leech mouth.
Like a leech mouth. While the more modern ones are just like gaping maws. With,
yeah.
Like, not maybe not quite jaws, but like big flappy lips.
It's big sloppy lip gonna get you.
Right,
you gonna get dragged under, get
and
chopped
that's my
by
description
all the teeth.
Of purple worms.
There it is, ladies.
It is said and to gents. Have. It is said to have slit-like eyes set above its mouth in a lot of the lore that I could find, but most art I could find depicts them without eyes, and its stat block lists it as having blind sight and not having dark vision. So I'm going to assume that the current edition of D&D, the purple worm, is indeed eyeless.
Okay.
That is what I'm going with.
Did you mention tremor sense? That's a thing, right?
They do have tremor sense in 4th edition, and they have it here in 5th edition.
Okay,
as well.
Cool.
So they have tremor sense, and they have blind sense. They don't have dark vision. The art I could find for 5e and 4e, no eyes. Only eyeballed versions I could find were from 1st and 2nd edition.
Okay.
So I'm assuming they're eyeless.
They live underground. Makes sense. Yeah, you don't need eyes under there.
The size of a fully grown purple worm also has a bit of discrepancy. The 3rd edition monster manual claims that the body of a mature purple worm is roughly 5 feet in diameter and 80 feet long, weighing about 40,000 pounds.
Holy shit.
Which is really big. But the 2nd edition monstrous manual lists the creature's full size as 8 to 9 feet in diameter and 140 to 150 feet long. So almost twice as big.
Oh my God. That's huge.
It's so, really
so
massive.
Huge. That's
like,
a bus.
Absolutely, like, that is,
that's a bus.
That's, I mean, that's a blue whale right there.
Yeah.
So purple worms also have poisonous stingers at the end of their tails. Most people don't know this because, I mean, the tail's the last thing you're going to be worried about. Stupid. Moving on. As I said before, purple worms exist deep within the earth, not always, but quite often in the Underdark.
Uh-huh.
They tunnel through packed earth and solid stone as easily and quickly as they travel through empty air, leaving behind passageways the width of their own bodies. They lunge forward by rhythmically compressing and expanding their bodies, catching their prey by surprise with the speed of their advance. Like, they move through it like water.
Okay.
I was serious.
Sorry. Like, well, like I was doing a scene in my head where like you're going to hear the tunneling in the Underdark and like maybe you're gonna look up and you're like, oh, some rocks are gonna fall from the ceiling, but everything under there is so like entranced by like, what is that rumbling sound?
Yeah.
And like some Kuto roll up and like some like flumps roll up.
Of course, everyone's
and,
here
like,
for the scene.
Like a lot of people are just like, what is that up above? And then the fucking purple worm just calls rocks down and fucking smash all of them.
Yeah. I mean, that could happen.
My brain just keeps going to that same shit.
Okay. Well, dirt and stone pass through the worm's digestive systems and are ejected from their bodies after they've extracted any and all nutrients from these substances. So even while they are moving, they are eating.
Yeah, their bodies are just absorbing all of the good dirt from the bad dirt.
Right. They layer in underground burrows, and given the average purple worm's enormous size, these layers are often incredibly gigantic.
Yeah.
Sprawling networks of round tunnels left behind are common near purple worm's layers, often crisscrossing and penetrating into vast pre-existing caverns.
Okay.
Occasionally, a purple worm's tunnel will breach the surface world. This effect benefits those dwelling in the Underdark in a small way, creating new air shafts to pump air into the Underdark.
Oh, hey.
And as has been established on the show in previous episodes, this is good because everyone seems to be farting down here.
Everybody's farting down there. But like, if you don't go down there with your own brand, though.
Yeah, that's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah, so find a purple worm air vent. Hope there's not a purple worm in it and take a deep breath because it's fartless.
Right. Purple worms do not often use their layers, though, as they spend most of their time killing and eating and digging. Usually they can only be found in their burrows when they have consumed so much that they need to be allowed to digest and rest for a while.
Okay.
Though most common in the Underdark, purple worms are at times known to live on the surface world in rocky and mountainous lands.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, that's wild. Can you imagine you're like standing on a mountain looking over a valley, like a desolate, like barren wasteland valley, and just like purple worms like
coming out breaching like dolphins. Like a whale? Yeah, yeah, like a whale.
Holy shit. That'd be wild.
No, we're going around.
Yeah,
we're going around. We're not going down there.
No, definitely not.
We're level 9. We're not doing this.
Right. So a purple worm is always on the hunt for more sustenance to maintain its enormous size. They hunt by tremor sense and have excellent hearing. Loud noises attract purple worm like magnets, and they have been known to interrupt underground battles and tear through subterranean cities seeking prey.
It's a graboid.
It's like a graboid. I fucking love that movie, by the way. Tremors is so good.
It wasn't even a purple worm episode and somebody was talking about Tremors in like Discord or something like that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I was like, well, I gotta fucking pay homage to that conversation. Yeah,
absolutely.
In this episode. But yeah, this is just Tremors.
It's the just movie. Tremors, the movie. Yeah.
Pardon my French.
Right.
But fuck this or whatever they say.
Right.
Fuck this shit.
Yeah.
Pardon my French.
A purple worm's emergence is difficult to predict, and the creature is prone to showing up at the worst possible times.
What?
Well, okay, so this makes sense, because if something extremely loud is happening in an underground city, for example.
Oh, unless, that's what you mean. Like, unless, it's not like the opposite of like the lucky feet or something.
This is just right,
like,
no, worm worms exactly. Just, well, they just happen to show up.
Man, no. It's just, you're like forging the sword that's going to kill God, and you're like, wouldn't it suck if a fucking purple worm barreled through the wall?
No, it's just if something loud is happening underground, like let's say in a city, it's probably either a celebration mm-hmm. or a disaster, both of which are times of society is least ready to deal with a Godzilla-like event.
Right.
So because of this, the underground civilizations of dwarves, the drow, the duergar, the mind flayers tend to maintain special wards around their settlements to deter these monsters, like magical deterrents.
Did you hear about that hobgoblin encampment that got mm-hmm. fucked up by the purple worm? I guess they were just out there stomping the yard.
Okay, that's a Super Quest Saga joke.
It's also a Dungeon Cast joke. I'm in canon. I'm super in line right now.
It's all intermingled. All right, let's hear short rest.
Justice for
Spock. It's short rest time.
Hey, folks. I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
Come check out our D&D 5e actual play podcast, Super Quest Saga, the show where Will, Brian, your special guest Jake, and friend of the show Josh Freeland sit around the table and play some Dungeons & Dragons in space. It's Will's homebrew sci-fi and space opera campaign. Find it on iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
Earned.
Now we've returned.
And now we've returned.
We've returned.
So let's talk about purple worms, Ryan.
Oh my God. Tunnel through my heart, purple worm. Jeez, I love this thing.
Oh man, I'm about to trash talk it right now. Like, no shit. So all in all, purple worms are not the most nuanced or interesting of creatures. They're really big. They dig, they kill, and they eat. That is really about it. They have an intelligence level of 1, which, as I've said before on the show, is 1 above a rock. They have no language or any real levels of reasoning or thought. They are all instinct. The most interesting facts about the purple worm aren't even about the worm itself, but about how their existence interacts with the others who have to fucking deal with them.
Yeah, because they're like a lot like regular worms.
Yeah, like imagine what life would be like if purple worms were real and we as humans had to deal with them showing up.
Or like, even if like earthworms were the size of a bus, like that would right. that would suck some balls.
Imagine if like one just tears through your house.
And you're yeah,
like,
man, shit. My leg.
I don't have earthworm insurance.
I don't have leg insurance. How am I going to get this back?
Also, you could look at like movies like Pacific Rim, where like everything about human life changed when the kaiju showed up.
Yeah,
it'd be like that.
Or Avatar: The Last Airbender.
What do you mean?
Well, oh, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
Okay, all right. So as I said before.
Well, hang on. I'm going to say something to you that I said before the show that I really want on the record, which is sometimes all you got to do is be big.
It's true. And that's all these guys have done. And it's worked really well for them.
Yeah. It's their greatest defense is they're very, huge, very big. Yeah.
So as I said before, burrowing purple worms constantly create new tunnels throughout the Underdark.
Right.
Areas rich in prey quickly become interlaced with complex tunnel systems resulting from several worms hunting together. Because a purple worm rarely returns to its own tunnels, though, after they have cleared out their prey, such passageways end up becoming good places to actually avoid these monsters.
Okay. Which, it's like, it's already been here. Exactly. Lightning ain't going to strike twice, maybe.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
go. They're trying to eat.
So these tunnels end up being quickly made use of by other creatures as corridors and highways. Mm. So with as much death and destruction as purple worms cost to society, they also are responsible for increased trade and travel between said society. It's quite possible that without these routes, civilizations of the Underdark would stagnate and grow meager rather than be able to maintain their standard of living.
Right. There wouldn't be like this fucking new highway. Mm-hmm.
It's a weird like double-edged sword.
I wonder if like the higher powers of the Underdark, like maybe, I don't know, like Illithids or something would try to manipulate a purple worm to go build a highway through a residency. And then mm-hmm. somebody is going to like be like, no, don't do it.
Yeah, and then, yeah, that's the thing. We're gonna kind of talk about that okay. a little bit. Not in exactly that scenario, but a similar thing.
I was really trying to form it around the beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when
they have to build a highway through Earth or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. Stupid. Yeah. Another fun fact about purple worms is that when they burrow through the ground and consume earth and rock, which breaks down and constantly excretes, harder substances such as valuable metals and gems are not digested by the worm and remain within their bodies for weeks or months on end.
No.
Yeah, because
no, Will, don't tell me the next part.
The next part's not what you're thinking.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I would do.
Well, because of this, particularly brave and foolhardy treasure hunters are prone to attempting to slay these magnificent beasts in pursuit of great wealth, more often than not to their mortal peril.
Oh, wait, the gems are just like up in their guts
yeah.
all the time? For oh, months I thought on they would just like come out in them, the stool.
Yeah. Exactly. No.
Oh, shoot.
Although I like that too. That's fun.
So you got to, oh.
Yeah, you got to kill
purple,
the beast.
A purple worm's belly is a treasure yeah. chest full of gems.
This is almost like, why would adventurers like fight these things if they didn't have to? And like, this is a kind of a good reason because this is one of those actual instances where you kill the thing and it drops treasure.
Yeah. Well, how real are we playing here? Does it drop treasure or did you spend a ton of hours breaking this thing open?
Yeah, probably a ton of hours breaking
it open. And then like, can you carry it all?
But I mean, if you're powerful enough to kill, you're probably powerful enough to get inside its guts.
And you might be powerful enough to do transportation magic.
But then again,
tensors floating discs some stones away.
Yeah, but then again, if you're that powerful, you'd probably have other means to get wealth anyways.
If you're that powerful, you're probably rich. Probably so rich.
You gotta be a crazy person if you're doing doing this.
I guess so. Yeah. Or desperate.
Or extremely desperate.
Or you do it on accident. Because like if you come across one and you have to fight it.
Yeah. Well, like, you might as well.
Well, guess what, dude? We successed just now.
Yeah.
So let's cut this bad boy open
and see what it's got inside.
Eat it and then take the gems.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay.
So some few peoples have discovered ways to turn purple worms into living weapons. Stories tell of powerful spellcasters who specialize in charm and enchantment magic who are able to magically seize control of these creatures.
Yeah. And then they've just got a purple worm chariot. They're just like dressing two up on a fucking thing, cart with wheels.
There we go.
Let's go.
The tales recount how these spellcasters could direct the worms at their enemies, wiping out entire cities or armies with a single worm. Rumors also circulate that some drow priestesses hold worms under their sway and use them for defense in remote areas where reinforcements aren't available. Dwarves are known to use purple worms for mining and tunnel building, yet despite centuries of effort, the beasts have never been fully tamed or domesticated. All attempts to control purple worms eventually end in disaster.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's
a very limited time thing.
Yeah, like how are you even getting it to do what you need in the first place? You
right.
Like, mind maybe control. Set off an explosion and like direct it in some area. And
it's like you can only control them in the vaguest of ways. Yeah.
Oh, man. And then maybe they're taking down your supply when they're chewing through the walls or whatever.
Right.
Ooh, okay.
So the purple worm is a naturally solitary creature that only ever seeks a companion purple worm for the purposes of mating. Mm-hmm. They lay their eggs and nest in areas called nurseries, usually dug out of their own lairs. Sometimes during the incubation period of the eggs, other creatures form an odd symbiotic relationship with the parent worms by moving into nearby tunnels.
Okay.
Giant spiders and other monsters, like underground creatures, which have no direct interest in the eggs themselves, often serve this symbiotic purpose. So these other creatures end up protecting the nursery by hunting for prey that is attracted to the eggs, whether as food or for their inherent value. This is not by intent of the creature, of course. It just so happens to work in both their and the purple worm's benefit.
Yeah,
it's like the that eggs makes sense. Attract prey, they protect the eggs from prey.
Yeah, like a spider setting up near an outdoor light or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
So this is much like in real life symbiotic relationships. They form out of mutual benefit and not by any sort of intent.
Okay, cool. But very cool for like if you're hunting purple worm eggs for some reason, like maybe you need one for a fucking magic spell and now you got to fight a bunch of spiders.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that's a cool kind of setup for an adventure. Like maybe deep gnomes discovered that there's a nesting pair of purple worms like a little too close for comfort near their city.
Yeah.
So they hire some dope ass adventurers to go exterminate them. And what would normally turn into like a monster hunt ends up becoming a dungeon crawl because you're going through these tunnels and they're like infested with all these different creatures.
Right.
And that want to eat you.
And then the fucking...
And then in the end, you have to fight two purple worms.
The Underdark Drow Pirates are there at the end. They want the purple worm eggs and now you got to fucking hash it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Much cool like stuff. Much like the third installment of the Vault Raiders where something similar to that happened.
Oh, yeah. Snakes!
Indeed. So, where was I? Oh, it is also said that Fomorian giants, which we haven't really talked about, they're like underground fey giants.
Yeah, we mentioned Fomorians.
Yeah, we'll talk about them more later. But It's said that they sometimes can develop relationships with purple worm parents as well and become caretakers of the clusters of eggs. And I'm not sure why.
Okay.
It didn't say why. I couldn't find why, but it's a thing that apparently can happen.
Hopefully when we get to Fomorians, we'll loop back around.
Exactly. And I was busy this week. I wasn't able to double my research into a whole other species of monstrosities. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that can happen. Purple worm eggs are approximately 3 feet in diameter, silvery spheres with extremely hard shells. They are often clustered together in groups of six and are suspended from their chamber walls with sticky strands of saliva.
Okay. Yuck.
Yeah, gross. They are highly valued by wizards for various arcane rituals. The moment a new worm hatches, it burrows into the ground, never to be seen by its siblings or parents again. So there's no real parenting or child rearing occurring in these species. Again, they have a one intelligence. What's there to learn?
What's there to learn? I know how to eat dirt. They're the sea turtles of the fucking ground.
Sure. Their lifespans are said to reach roughly 150 years in length.
Like a sea turtle.
Like a sea turtle. Yes, it's true. Any questions about the purple worm before we look at the stat block?
It's like a narrow purple turtle.
No, not at all.
Stat me up, bro.
All right. Purple worm. Gargantuan monstrosity.
Oh.
Unaligned.
Okay, cool.
Armor class. Were you hoping for huge giant again?
Huge giant. Huge worm.
Armor class 18. Hit points 247. It's got a walking speed of 50 feet and a burrow speed of 30 feet.
Fucking slither speed.
Yeah, slither speed. Strength of 28, dexterity 7, constitution 22, intelligence 1, wisdom 8, charisma 4. Let me see here. It's got blind sight. It's got tremor sense. It's a challenge rating 15.
Yeah.
It's a big boy. It has one feature called Tunneler. The worm can burrow through solid rock at half its burrow speed and leaves a 10-foot diameter tunnel in its wake. It's got two attacks, and it can make a multi-attack that is one bite attack, one stinger attack. Those are its two attacks. Bite. I know bite sounds simple, but it is two paragraphs long.
Yeah, it's real complicated. When for each row of teeth, fucking, there's a layer effect inside this thing's mouth.
Right. Okay. Exactly. So let's see. Plus 14 to hit, reach of 10 feet. 3d8 plus 9 piercing damage. If the target is a large or smaller creature, it must succeed a DC 19 dexterity saving throw or be swallowed by the worm. A swallowed creature is blinded and restrained. It has total cover against attacks and other effects outside the worm, and it takes 6d6 acid damage at the start of each of the worm's turns.
Oh, wow.
So that's brutal. That's the first paragraph.
Okay.
If the worm takes 30 damage or more on a single turn from a creature inside of it, the worm must succeed a DC 21 constitution saving throw at the end of it that turn, or regurgitate all swallowed creatures, which fall prone in a space within 10 feet of the worm. If the worm dies, the swallowed creature is no longer restrained by it and can escape from the corpse by using 20 feet of movement, exiting prone. So it's not just a bite. It's an eat. That should actually be called eat.
Eat. Consume.
Consume. Ooh, better. It should be called consume.
Okay.
The last action that the purple worm has is tail stinger. Melee weapon attack, plus 14 to hit, reach 10 feet. One creature, 3d6 plus 9 piercing damage, and the target must make a DC 19 constitution saving throw, taking 12d6 poison damage on a failed save, half as much damage on a successful one. So, I mean, it's just a powerhouse. It's just big. It's got high armor class. It's got high ability scores. It's got lots of HP, and its attacks do lots of damage.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as that.
Just fucking... Yeah. Don't get hit. Don't get hit by this thing.
And don't go underground. No. I've never been in a campaign where I got to fight a purple worm, and I've always wanted to. They just seem like almost like I like it because it reminds me kind of like the Hydra. It's just a big scary monster.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just fun to fight big scary monsters that aren't like, you know, a spellcaster or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I get this is just literally a tank out there.
Yeah.
I would have this like if you're in the Underdark, mm-hmm. this is like a very low percent chance random encounter for me. Like,
sure, yeah.
Until we get to some point where like, oh, well, there's a purple worm genie down here. Not genie, that's a thing. A purple worm wizard down here, and he's just like trying to fucking manipulate the purple worms.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
He's going to put them on his, he's going to make them into fists and punch you with them.
I think the reason that I can be drawn to like the big giant monsters is because it reminds me of Greek mythology, which I'm a big fan of reading those stories. And it's just, it's like you're Heracles and you're fighting the giant whatever. And
all my favorite shows I found out have one thing connected in between them. Uh-huh. And most of my like favorite shows, it's either like there's always a giant fucking monster in it. Somehow it's just showing up like Dragon Ball. They got big monkeys. Sure. Although that kind of gets taken out. Whatever. I like it.
The dragon's still big.
It has giant. Yeah, the dragons. It has big monsters. It's got big buff guys. Whatever. A lot of crotch shots in Dragon Ball.
Hey, man. You got to get those crotch shots.
You got to get those crotch shots.
Naruto's got the...
Naruto's got big old boobies everywhere. But they've got the tailed beasts.
Well, I mean, they got the giant beasts.
I was jumping off of crotch shots. They do crotch shots too, but it's girls and not Goku and Vegeta.
Right. What are the monsters called? I can't remember.
Tailed beasts.
Yeah, but isn't there a word for them?
There's like Shikaku is like the one tail.
Yeah.
And then
the tail beasts are dope. And yeah,
okay, yeah.
Much kaiju fighting.
yeah, kaijus, Godzilla.
Any questions about purple worms?
They're so big. is it worth mentioning? I guess Adventure Zone kind of uses it as like a plot hook. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That might be worth talking about.
That was a pretty good. I mean, I don't want to spoil because that's a big spoiler.
That's a big one. But it was a very good use on the Dungeon Master's part of the way they use this big meat monster.
Yeah.
To like.
And the meat monster did the thing that it does. It destroys towns and villages.
Right. Yeah. So like it was acting very in line, but using it in an interesting way, and like there was emotion involved and things like that
to help it was make a well-told story. Yeah. That was probably the best told story section of the Adventure Zone.
Yeah, I would say arc. So. Yeah. This is like a monster that could be, it's all up to you how you want to put your spin on this to make it a little more interesting. Yeah. Like I like the random encounter, but because I think it was interesting to randomly encounter a purple worm, because it's like, fuck, now we have to fight this giant thing, and it has no emotion. It's just a fucking meat monster.
You can't reason with it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, like, a cool thing for to just happen. Mm-hmm. But, like, as a plot point, you're going to need to do some noodling, some man-wavering.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it could be as simple as, like, what I said before, is, like, a city discovered that there's a nesting pair too close for comfort. Eventually those eggs are going to hatch. And what are these purple worms going to do? They're going to be real hungry and come for the nearest meat sacks.
Right.
So we need to, like, nip this in the bud and hire some dope ass adventurers to go take care of it. So go take care of it.
Yeah. That one's a cool one.
Yeah. It's pretty, I mean, it's standard.
That's almost like side questy, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Kill the purple worms.
Yeah, there we go. And I think they do serve good as a side quest.
Yeah. A baby purple worm wouldn't have, like, a high loot scenario because they haven't eaten enough.
No, but
gems,
the nesting pair of parents.
Yeah, but the parents, yeah, that'll be a cool loot drop. Like, hey, go kill the purple worms. We'll give you passage to here, like you're asking, and you can keep the spoils.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, with that being said, I think we can get ready for a long rest.
Okay. Sounds good. So I have these little slippers that are
always talking about your slippers.
They look like little bear. They look like little bear feet.
For sure. I'm
and then I take them off and I've just got bear feet and I get in my bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to our long rest, guys.
Warm milk.
Or at least us getting ready for it.
Warm milk, a midnight tobacco pipe. Ready to go.
Okay, for sure.
Midnight. That's when I go to bed is midnight. No, I go to bed at 8, man.
Oh, not me, man. I'm a creature of the night. I'm probably asleep most nights between 3:30 and 4:30 a.m.
That's the life I used to live too, man. Yeah. I'm in bed by 8 because I'm awake by 4. So
yeah, fair enough.
That works.
You're awake by the time I'm falling asleep.
So that's why my slippy game gotta be so good. I gotta get warm and toasty in my bedtime, and I gotta get it right. Watch Super Quest Saga.
It's please do.
Fucking space times. It with is dice. It is. There's D20s and
laser guns
and a dude that looks like that guy from fucking Stranger Things and the new Black Widow movie.
Who?
Freeland looks just like Homeboy.
No, the fuck he does not.
Dude, I was showing people at work, doppelganger. We got it in the comments.
Does Josh Freeland look like what's his name from Stranger Things? Hopper.
Hopper
from no. No,
what's
he
that
doesn't.
Guy's name? Yeah, he does. Yeah,
Josh Freeland does not look like Hopper.
I'm a side by side.
All right. I posted on Instagram his face.
For his birthday, and people was like, y'all got that fucking Stranger Things going on? And I was like, literally like a month before that, I was looking at that. I was looking at something that had that guy on it. Mm-hmm. And I went over to special guest Jake and I was like, is this guy look like this guy to you? And he was like, oh yeah, man. I've always thought,
that's
he thinks
crazy.
So.
Okay. Maybe. So. Now I need to look. Anyways. Watch Super Quest Saga where apparently we have Hopper from Stranger Things.
Yeah. But Freeland's way cooler than whoever that guy is.
He's pretty cool.
Freeland's pretty
Hopper's
fucking cool.
Pretty cool. Have you seen Stranger Things?
I watched the first half of the first episode and then there were teenagers making out. Shut that shit right off.
Oh dude, it's one of the best shows like ever. You should definitely watch that show.
I can't get through the teenagers.
You know, in the first episode of the first season, I don't even remember that.
It was like some bathroom makeout. It was really uncomfortable.
Okay.
Yeah, I got really uncomfortable.
You know they're adults in real life, right?
Oh. They look like teenagers.
And teenagers make out sometimes, man.
Like some 13-year-olds
in the
bathroom.
That's a fact you're gonna have to learn to
live
with.
Yeah, but I don't want
to
watch it.
Well, you fast forward it.
Anyways,
we have a new t-shirt. God damn it. I'm not going to argue about you deciding not to watch some of the best shows ever made.
I tried. I got in there.
All right.
We got, let's just commit. There's a new Thumbcast. Check it out. It's all about my fucking appendages down here. These ones, opposable. Just kidding. Thumbnail. Mm-hmm. For the podcast is what I meant to say.
You've probably seen it already.
You've probably seen it already. It's a big guy.
In honor of our Year of the Giant, I guess this is the thing we're doing now where the thumbnail is going to change with the year.
I guess this
one looks really cool. I'm actually a really big fan of this one.
Yeah. It's fucking awesome.
So we're slapping it on a mug. We're slapping it on a t-shirt. And it's on Teespring if you guys want one. So if you guys want to help support the show and if you want something that looks really cool, check out the link below. It's in the description. It'll take you right to our store.
That's right. You can always check us out on Patreon. Please go check out Ranger Danger, which is up there for free right now. I also put a cap on the $1 tier. We can have 100 $1 tier people, and then we're just going to fucking cap it. So if you have that $1 spot, you're going to get those special benefits. Close those up, and we're going to look into shifting. I know we've talked about it before, but it didn't pan out. We're going to look at it again and try to tweak some things to make Patreon a better experience for us and you.
Yeah, indeed.
We're always looking at that. I know Patreon is working really hard too. make things better because, like, man, their app sucks.
Oh, so bad. It's one of the worst apps.
Their website's passable.
Passable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done some things. They've done some things to make the content more accessible, like featured tags and stuff.
It's barely passable, man.
It's barely passable. Yeah. So, like, really just check your Patreon email is the best way to go. If you guys have any, if you're in our Patreon, you have questions about what is available, where to find stuff. There's people in our Discord can help you out, but you can come to us too. Like, you can email us, you can message us through Patreon, you can message us through Discord, you can message us on Instagram or Twitter, just or Gmail, the dungeoncast@gmail.com. You can hit us up at any of those places. We're more than happy to help. We worked really hard on our bonus content. We want you to experience it. There's a lot of stuff in that $5 tier, and there's a lot of you in there. So please take advantage. $10 tier, y'all know. The $10 people know what's up. They're on an FBATS train and, like, all is well.
Yeah.
That's where all of the live game specials are. You can go check those out. Fucking check it out, man. We got lots of... If you like this show, if you like Super Quest Saga, you're going to like the stuff that's in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we told you to go check out the space game.
We love the space game. So I think we can call it a game.
Okay, bye.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
See ya.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.